Thanks for the introduction. And I think it's perfect that my presentation follows Manisha's because it's based on a lot of the same type of evidence, actually, and covers some of the same ground, but in Egypt. I'm here today to discuss some of the findings of the Egypt Violence Against Women Survey. The Violence Against Women Survey was conducted between 2008 and 2009 by the Combating Violence Against Women and Children Project, which I led. The project was funded by the United States Agency for International Development, and it's part of an ongoing, much larger project dealing with both violence against women and violence against children issues. So the study was just a small part of the work that we've done, and it's ongoing, by the way, so if you're interested in it, please come up afterwards and I can supply some information. I should say that I also will go through the presentation very quickly in the interest of time. I have some handouts with some more tables and information and data. Also, please come up afterwards if you want the original study pieces. It's quite extensive. In the interest of disclosure, I'll say I'm an employee of Chemonics International, which is a private company. I have an interest in this in that I led the project during the study and have a passion both personally and professionally to see it successful. So what was the Egypt Violence Against Women study? Let me find where I was. I'm sorry, I've lost myself. The Egypt Violence Against Women study was designed and implemented, as I said, by the Combating Violence Against Women and Children Project. It was funded by USAID. It was part of a partnership with the Egyptian National Council for Women. The Egyptian National Council for Women is a high-level body reporting directly to the presidency, and the president of the council is Suzanne Mubarak, the First Lady. So it's a high-level political body. It's charged with reducing gender discrimination, women's empowerment, women's political participation, and other areas of gender equality in Egypt. In designing the study with the council and at that political level, and it's a very sensitive topic, as you can imagine, in a developing country, we had to make some compromises. Among those compromises were we could not use the term intimate partner violence. Rather, we had to focus on spousal violence and focus on, of course, violence between married heterosexual couples. We had to exclude other forms of intimate partner violence, unfortunately. We also had to exclude violence against children, and that's a silly internal political reason in Egypt. There's another body, another council that deals with children's issues. Therefore, we couldn't step on their toes, so we had to stay kind of away from that. I should say another part of the project does work with that council and is instrumental in implementing a newly passed child law, which does really conform to international standards. It's really a wonderful example for other countries. The study was led by Egyptians. The study was led by Egyptians. All the main researchers were Egyptian. We did have a couple of major international contributors, both in the design phase, the implementation phase, and in the analysis and recommendations phase, including we had the privilege of hosting Yasmin Ertürk, the former Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women, to contribute several other experts, including the head of Violence Against Women programs in New York City for the New York State, who also contributed to this, and several others. Finally, the study was designed in the perspective of the international human rights framework, following on the UN Declaration on the Elimination of All Forms of Violence Against Women, and the CEDAW, of course. Partly this design was because Egypt has ratified and agreed to these resolutions and these international conventions. So to go outside of that would require another political step, so we stayed within the framework that Egypt had already agreed to with the study. I won't go into all the details. There were a lot of different parts to the study. It wasn't just a single survey. We did a literature review, two analyses of existing, secondary analyses of existing data sets, including the DHS data from Egypt. And then we also worked with a local firm to do a new survey of married men, women, and also female, unmarried female and male youth, which is something missed by the DHS and a lot of the other surveys in this area. We also did an analysis of the legal and regulatory framework, media coverage, and services for victims. If we turn to the DHS survey, I'll find where I am here. Am I talking? I'm probably talking too fast, as usual.
No,
that's fine. Okay. Well, if we turn to the DHS survey, I'm sorry here. Ahead of myself. We found that the DHS survey from 2005 shows that 47.4% of ever married women have experienced some form of physical violence at some point in their lives, 33% by current and former husbands. And I think these numbers compare with data from other similar countries around the world. If you look at 1995 and 2005, the 2 years in which they did ask violence against women panels, there's a little change in the incidence of violence. Dr. Zanetti, who did the original EDHS survey and also did a secondary analysis for us, what he did next was used logistic regression analysis to look to control for various different factors. In that, she found that urban women who work are slightly more likely to experience violence than women who don't work. Higher education levels of both husband and wife are associated with lower levels of violence. Interestingly, urban-rural differences and income differences showed no relation to your likelihood of experiencing violence. And I think on these two factors, this is kind of challenges a lot of commonly held beliefs, especially amongst Egyptian elites, which I'd say probably is not uncommon here and in other parts of the world, in that violence in the home or spousal violence is a problem of the poor, of the traditional, of the uneducated. I think her analysis shows that's not necessarily the case. If we look at and compare the 1995 and 2005 data, we find that in going back to the attitudes questions, in 1995 there's a significant change in the 10 years. For example, and this is just one example because they did ask the full panel of five questions, in 1995 70% of women believed that a husband was justified in beating her for refusing sex. In 2005, only 34% agreed with this statement, which is significant. In other areas, there were declines, but not as significant in the other questions. I should say that the declines were most significant in urban areas and amongst educated groups. Unfortunately, of course, these change in attitudes weren't paralleled or weren't accompanied by a change in actual experience, which can only mean that women are even more frustrated by their situations and upset by them. But hopefully it does bode, you know, positives for the future. If we turn to some of the results from the new survey that we did of, again, married women, married men, unmarried young women, and unmarried young men, and here I'll focus on help-seeking behavior. I mean, we did do the rest of the survey panels as well, but I'll just focus here on help-seeking behavior. 25% of women who experience spousal violence asked for some form of support. The rest did nothing. Most of the women who asked for support asked for it from their own families. That's their parents or their brothers, their family structures. Only a few asked for it outside the home, and very, very few asked for it from the police or any government organization. Of those who didn't ask for help, more than 70% cited fear of their husband's anger as one of the reasons. Others cited issues of family honor, it will make no difference, it will make matters worse, and the like. If we turn to forms of non-spousal violence or non-intimate partner violence, some of the other findings, and again, there's more details. Unmarried women experience significant levels of violence from their parents and their male siblings. They're often beaten by their brothers or hit by their brothers. More than 90%, if we turn to violence outside the home now, and of course there we also found, and it's not here, that in-laws, mothers-in-laws, are also a source of violence. Usually emotional, and questions like she encourages her son to hit her, she encourages her son to lock her in the house, these types of responses. If we turn to violence outside the home, harassment's become a big issue in Egypt. Actually, one of the women who participated in the study from the Egyptian Center for Human Rights, Nihad Avalom Son, is leading a major campaign. It's had a real effect in raising political prominence of sexual harassment in the street and verbal harassment. I think more than 90% of young women, unmarried women, report being harassed verbally in the street. If you go to Cairo and Alexandria, urban areas, big urban areas, it's 99%. It happened. All women have this experience. I don't know where that 1% were. They probably didn't leave the house. More than 20% of unmarried and 16% of married women have been touched inappropriately in the street. And many have also experienced, about 20% also have experienced attempts to be robbed. Again, in urban areas, 40% of women report having attempts to rob them. Unfortunately, I think, you know, again, there's still an attitude issue where large majorities of both men and women place the blame for harassment on women's behavior. That's the way she dresses, whether she's out at night by herself, how she walks, and these types of factors. Now, a large proportion of women, and both married and unmarried, also do place the blame on what they call poor morals of male youth. Some, it's interesting, we asked about drugs, and it was almost zero across the board, except for young women blame it on drugs. I'm not sure what they sense or they know that that their mothers and their fathers don't. I'll skip through. This is on the legal structure and the media and the services. I'm just skipping through those quickly because I think we're going to run out of time. We can always come back to those if you're interested. On the legal structure, I mean, if the basic thing is that the legal structure, while the constitution of Egypt and the formal legal structure guarantees equal rights between men and women, the legal structure is very weak in supplying safeguards for women victims of violence. It's considered assault. There's no special provisions in the law for it. Police rarely prosecute. They usually defer to the husband, and they don't want to get involved in a family situation. The same could be said for violence against children. I wanted to turn to, and in conclusion, sort of some areas I see for further research based on the findings of the study. And maybe to kind of start out with kind of a broad thing, there's a limit to what empirical research, this type of quantitative research and surveys can do. Quantitative or survey research, really, you know, you're measuring the opinions, the ideas, and the experiences of individuals. The sum of the individuals does not necessarily equal the social whole. And I think we have to understand that, for example, somebody may have a liberal social attitude, but in public, because of social pressures, because of pressure of violence, because of wanting to fit in, they'll act in a conservative way. And I know in my personal experience over years, I've met a lot of people who are very open-minded, but then it gets to their own family or it gets to a dynamic where they're in a social situation with other people, they're conservative. So I think these surveys don't get at that, what's going on there. I think, you know, turning back to sort of the subject of violence against women, I think we need to understand better the role the family and social structure plays, both in perpetuating violence and in mitigating it. And I think we find in statistic, in the empirical data, that, for example, severe physical violence, I hate to use the word severe, but I'll use it for a lack of a better term. That's physical violence in which a woman experienced broken bones, bruises, the need for medical treatment. It's worse in the urban slum areas. It's actually best in the conservative areas of Upper Egypt. So if you go to a small town with a very, very, very solid, very traditional culture, actually there fewer women report having been injured. Whereas you go to an urban area that's a slum area and more women report being injured. Now we know anecdotally and from reading anthropology and sociology that women in social situations, even in traditional social situations, have resources they can draw on to get themselves out of those situations. The family is not monolithic. It's not monolithically conservative. It has maybe more liberal members in it. One can turn to help for help. There are certain traditional mechanisms women can use with their family, with other families, to get out of bad situations. Now, there are limits here, but what you find, I think, is as people are pulled out of that social fabric is in transition, that you get some very high levels of violence. One might also say the same thing about women, the finding that women who work experience more violence. Now, my question is there, I would like to see more research on, again, like, is that a transition phase? Is that because there's a renegotiation of the relationship between men and women? Is that male hostility that the woman's now bringing home money and she's demanding a say in the household affairs? Again, I think there's a limit to survey research, and I think we need to turn to anthropology and sociological models to really look and really design interventions that are targeted towards these specific groups. And also realize that in terms of short-term interventions, we can't look purely at the experience. We can't tell a woman in a small village that she just goes to the shelter. That's her only solution. We know from evidence in Egypt that very few women will turn to a shelter, and that pulls her out of a whole social fabric that you'll have to replace if you're going to pull her out of the family. And most women would like to stay within that social fabric, but are there strategies? Are there ways of protecting her within that fabric? are there interim solutions while society is changing, while we're building new attitudes and new practices? Just a few other different small things that I think we could study as we go further. I think also survey research misses unseen violence, I'll call it. I mean, going back to the small town or the threat of violence. Again, maybe we only see physical violence on the margins when people are challenging social structures or social structures are changing. But there doesn't mean that there's not a threat of violence within that small town or within that family. And maybe the good girl, the quote-unquote good girl, or the good wife, is the good girl and the good wife because there is that, she is surrounded by the threat of violence and the potential for violence if she transgresses that patriarchal social order. And I think the survey doesn't capture that. You know. So again, Upper Egypt, less violence. But does that mean that women there just are more accepting of their roles, there's no challenging to their roles, and that's why? And it's only in these transitional situations that you see, let's say, the underground violence become manifest in actual violence. Finally, of course, as I started out, I mean, I think we could look at non-spousal violence. That's between dating couples, which, of course, officially maybe we would deny that it happens in Egypt, but anybody who's been out on the Nile and seen all the couples walking along arm in arm knows it happens. But again, that's an area we couldn't study. And of course, violence between same-sex partners, violence between other types of partners, I think also is something that should be looked at. But again, that'll probably have to happen for now outside of the official USAID, US Egyptian government framework. I hope that there's some graduate students who are interested in that sort of thing. And finally, I think we need, and I think echoing what you said, with regular follow-up surveys, and surveys that include, again, look at attitudes and beliefs of men, young men, unmarried women, beyond the health framework of the DHS, which looks, as we know, purely at married women of childbearing age. And I think I'll stop there, because I got to stop, and I'm done anyway. If you'd like to know more, I've got the handouts up here. I've also got some more information on the project. Thanks.
Thank you so much for that very interesting presentation. And before I have our last speaker come up for the day, I would just like to say that you mentioned about that women sometimes are the worst enemies of women. I'm originally from India, and it's so sad that in spite of all the progress India is making financially, economically, and becoming, you know, giving China a run for its money, I guess, that there is still so much of violence against women, which is supported by women, including dowry deaths and burning, even though, you know, there have been laws passed. So I think this is something I hate to say it, sometimes a woman can be a woman's worst enemy when she assumes a position of power, like, you know, a mother-in-law.